Chapter 14, Bator's Story, which first had to be put into correct Chinese, and then into English. I am 16 years old, but I know nothing of my first year of life, as I was not yet in the world. My father's name is Serat, and my grandfather, who is dead, was called Gombo. He was a much-traveled man, and one of the old kind, who wore pigtails, and he had friends everywhere. Grandfather Gombo made a pilgrimage to Kumbum. A note tells us the sacred tree of Kumbum is an ancient white sandalwood tree believed to have sprung up from the hairs of Tsongkhapa, born about 1306 AD, founder of the Yellow Lamas. Made a pilgrimage to Kumbum, where the miraculous tree grows, which has prayers written on its leaves. He traveled to Ulyasutai, where there are many traders. He knew Urga, the city of the gods, and when anyone asked him, "Where have you not been to yet, Gombo?" he used to answer, "Nowhere at all." And soon my grandfather was no longer called Gombo, but Nowhere at All. When my father was 8 years old, Grandfather Nowhere at All came home from a journey he had made to the Etzen Gaul. There he had found a new friend called Naidong, and as Nowhere at All liked doing extraordinary things, he had scarcely got down from his horse when he said to my father, "My son, I have found a bride for you." That in itself was all right, because among us Mongols, children are betrothed when they reach 7 or 8 years. So my father rejoiced, as a dutiful son should, and said, "I am unworthy of your kindness." But my grandmother was not pleased. "A Mongol of the Chachar tribe," she said, "takes a Chachar girl to wife, not a stranger. What kind of people are those at the Etzin Gol?" "They are of the Torgut tribe," said Nowhere at All. "That's just it," cried grandmother. "The Torgut Mongols are tramps. A few hundred years ago they were in Russia, and a few hundred years later they came back. They have no feeling for tradition, and you have been so long with them that you too no longer know what is right." She said this because while grandfather was away, she had been looking around for a suitable daughter-in-law. But Nowhere at All kept firmly to his decision, and so, when my father was 18 years old, he married a Torgut girl. My good grandmother had a lot of trouble with grandfather. Instead of bringing the bride home, here, to White Stone, he took father off with him to the Etzin Gol when the time came for him to marry. And there, as grandmother kept saying for the rest of her life, they celebrated the wedding with little formality. She said this because she was not there, and because Nowhere at All remained a whole year at the Etzin Gol. When at last he returned home, he said, "It was a perfectly correct wedding in every way, for the celebrations lasted a whole year." Grandmother did not like such jokes, but she was pleased that my mother brought her home a grandchild. It was I. My name is Bator. One of the descendants of the Genghis Khan was called Bator. I was born in the desert near a well which gives only bad, salty water. It is called the Box Spring because near it there is a mountain which is called Abder, the Box, because it looks like one, and it is generally considered a dangerous mountain. I have never been there, but I would like to go there, for it is sad not to know one's birthplace, even if it is dangerous. Since I was born, our yurt has stood 1,000 paces from here at the foot of the hill White Stone. An hour ago, we broke it up. A stone's throw from our tent is the well called White Stone. The water is good and never dries up. To make sure that it would always remain clear, Nowhere at All did something wonderful. From far and wide, he brought willow rods, both thick and thin, and with these he plaited a watertight basketwork around the shaft of the well, right down to where the water begins. Since then, no crumb of earth has ever fallen into the well. When Nowhere at All had finished his task, he called my father and spoke very seriously to him, and commanded him to pass on his words to his son, that's me, and that he, that's me again, should save them up for his sons, and so on to the end of all time. Later, I learned from my father what my grandfather had said. "My son," he had said, "look at this well hole, which I have encircled firmly with 1,000 times 1,000 willow rods. No more earth can ever fall into it, and no stone can come loose." It was a frightful task. "Your mother is happy and proud that we now have a well such as no one far or wide has got. But your mother is an unwise woman. I have gone down into the well so often and clambered up again by the rope that I realize I have lost face thereby. It was a work unworthy of a free Mongol. If I had known at the beginning what I know now, I would never have begun it. Your mother is an unwise woman. But she was right when she said once that the Torgut Mongols know nothing of good custom. I saw a well like this at the Etzin Gaul, and I wanted to have one like it. And so I have let myself be tempted to do base work. The Torguts are good people, but they have no sense of honor. They must have lost it through living so long at the Volga. I shall leave you now for several years, for how could I ever look at a free Chachar Mongol without blushing for shame? When I come back, I hope the matter will be forgotten. Forget not, my son, what your father is saying to you. Herd horses, and kill the wolf when you meet it. Breed camels, and ride, if you will, to the edge of the world. But do not soil your hands with base labor." Those were the words of my grandfather, who was called nowhere at all. Away he rode, and he died on his wanderings in the valley of dark rushing water. And as I was small then, I can hardly remember him. Not long after we heard he was dead, grandmother died too. "What have I to live for now?" she said. "I have spent all my days waiting for nowhere at all to come back to me. I need do so no longer." About this time our ill luck began. A Chinaman came from Kalgan. No one knew him. He never said where he came from, and as we had no longer a prince to forbid him, he camped here where the inn Joyous Prosperity now stands. He bought our skins and wool and gave us flour, salt, and tea instead. As he wore a green coat, we called him Green Coat, and so he is still called. He did not stay long at Whitestone. Nobody wanted to trade with him, as he was a deceiver. The flour he sold was bad, and his weights were wrong. One day he brought another Chinaman, who gave him a great deal of money for the land which Greencoat said belonged to him. Greencoat disappeared, and we heard he had joined the Redbeards. The other man began to plow up our pastures. He sowed millet and built a hut. My father said it would be a good thing to strike him dead, but we are under the strict ambam of Kalgan, and so the stranger was left alive. What his real name is, I do not know. Called him Hailstone, because he used often to stand looking up at the sky for something we don't have here. Grandfather Nowhere at All told us there were such things as hailstones, and that he had seen them, but that they were very rare. Hailstone is a peaceable man. All the same, he took more and more of our pasture land, which he called his own, because he had given Greencoat money for it. After his arrival, 3 more Chinese families came from Shenzi, and they live beyond in the hills. And so our sheep had not enough to eat. We used to have 200, but by the time Hailstone had built his inn, we had only 40. He opened his inn on a New Year's Day, and a man came from Kalgan and painted the words Joyous Prosperity on a black shield. Hailstone pasted lucky red paper strips on the door of the inn and said he was a good neighbor. At the opening ceremony, he invited my father, Serat, to drink 3 glasses of wine with him. "I don't mind," my father said. It is a custom of ours to visit relatives and friends on New Year's Day. We ride at a gallop from tent to tent, drink wine made of mare's milk, and are merry. The man who rides the farthest in the shortest time has a big face for the whole year, and people say that his horse is a grandson of Bosa Fabo. Bosa Fabo was the Khan's stallion, and even the little children sing songs about him. My father was one of the most renowned horse herds of the Chachar tribe, and he had a nut-brown horse with a white star on its forehead like Bosa Fabo. On New Year's Day, he rode as far afield as the country of the Sunnit Mongols, and by the time he arrived back at White Stone, he had left all the other riders and horses far behind him. He drank the 3 glasses for friendship with Hailstone and set out in the night to return to his herd, for he was a Marin. That is a man who has charge of 360 horses. He had himself lashed fast to the saddle, for he had been obliged to drink a great deal. And as he rode off, he sang songs about Bossa Fabo, the stallion of Genghis Khan. It was snowing and blowing a gale, but the horse knew the road, and it went at a gallop, because no horse dare walk on New Year's Day. On the way, it stumbled into a hole, which was covered with a snowdrift, and my father's song had a sudden end. The horse broke a leg and died of exhaustion in the night. My father also broke a leg, and when they found him, he was lying half-frozen under the dead horse. The leg remained stiff, and after that he was no longer called Serat, and he could not be a Marin any more. He was given the shameful name of Dogalon, the lame one, and as he could no longer herd horses, he sold the 12 that belonged to him and bought camels instead. As we had lost most of our pasture lands to the Chinamen, it was all the same whether we grazed the camels 1 day's journey distant or 10. From that time onward, my father stayed away during the summer months. He used to take the camels out to where the steppe ceases and the desert begins. In the steppe there is green grass and weeds, and when the camels came into the desert, they ate darasen grass and sharamat. They gnawed the tamarisks and grew fat and strong. A note tells us that darasen grass is steppeland grass, and sharamat is an evergreen shrub, and tamarisk is a small evergreen tree. Traders came and bought them. We had enough to eat, and my father had some silver shoes in the chest. A note tells us, silver shoes are lump silver, still a form of currency in China and Mongolia. It is melted down by the silversmith into shoes, or bars of various weights, from which the money changer chips off pieces, giving silver or copper coinage in exchange. He had begun with 10 camels, and we possessed 22 when Green Coat came to us 2 years ago. Green Coat had meantime become a rich merchant, but there were people who wondered how that came about, and who shook their heads and said, "Aha," and "We know how he did it." Our camels were still on their winter pastures a few hours from here, and Lo Cheng and I were herding them. Lo Cheng is the eldest son of one of the 3 families from Shenxi, and as he was poor, my father gave him 2 silver bots a month to herd the camels in the winter with me, and the sheep in the summer, and we were friends. We hunted the wolves, and we knew the steppe and all the good wells around. The evening my father made the regrettable deal with Greencoat, the 2 of them came out to us. They picked the 10 best camels, and Greencoat asked Lo Cheng, "Who are you?" Lo Cheng said who he was and where he came from. Greencoat seemed astonished and said, "Come over here. I have something to say to you." He took Lo Cheng aside. "You must be a poor dog indeed," he said to him, "to be in service with a Mongol. I know a better job for you. A friend of mine will give you 4 silver bots a month and good food. If you're clever, you'll earn all sorts of extras, but you must keep your mouth shut." Lo Cheng reflected that he owed it to his parents to earn more, and he said, "I am at the disposal of your friend." The next morning he went away with Greencoat, and my father said, "Hamaga, that's what the Chinese are like. For money they forsake their friends." But that was not so. Lo Cheng did what he had to do as a dutiful son, but he didn't forget us. The very next day he sent us news of the disastrous death of Greencoat's camels in the snowstorm. We learned that the camels we sold were alive, and my father rode to Lake Town to see the dead ones with his own eyes. Later, when Greencoat went to the Amban at Kalgan, and when he sent armed police again and again from the Yaman to take the camels, Lo Cheng always came and warned us the night before. We gave him a present of a lamb each time, and Lo Cheng brought it to his employer, the innkeeper, who had lent him a horse, to come to us. We were always able to drive away the camels, and my mother remained alone at White Stone. She gave the men from the Yamen a few silver bots to report that they had looked everywhere but had found none of us. And so each time all went well. But now it can't go on like that. How will it go now? Heaven only knows. I realized that when I looked at the sun yesterday evening and saw it was yellow. I noticed the brown cloud bank, and my camels noticed the sun and the cloud bank too. They came to me without being called and tried to make me understand their fear. I saddled a swift camel and reached home by sundown. My father praised my foresight, and I praised the camels. While we were tying them up for the night, a long procession of distinguished people passed by in great haste. A standard bearer rode in front. Then came a man with a big umbrella, though the sun was no longer shining. Behind rode men with red fringes on their hats. They were officers of the Beilin Wang, who is a king. Then came high lamas and a young man on a white horse. They were escorting a magnificent carriage drawn by a camel and were seeking refuge from the coming snowstorm. And Hailstone came out and invited them to stay with him. I begged my father to let me stay behind at the inn for a while to see everything. He allowed me to do so, so I spoke to the camel man. He told me that the living Buddha of the Beilin Sum Monastery had come, and that his name was Yolrus Lama. He rides in the beautiful carriage, and the eldest son of the Beilin Wang rides beside him on a white horse. Yesterday evening, the living Buddha and the prince remained in the beautiful room on the warmed Kang, but as I wanted to make my kowtow to Yolrus Lama and to receive his blessing, I stayed in the courtyard until the gate was shut. A note tells us that a kowtow is the Chinese custom of kneeling and touching the ground with the forehead as a mark of deep respect. Then it began to snow, and I crept under the big umbrella, which is carried in front of kings and holy men, even when the sun is not shining. I was asleep when you came, and I was frightened at first by the terrible noise of the car. I had never seen a horseless car before, and I gave thanks to heaven for permitting me to see so many new things all at once. I quickly made a little hole in the umbrella. Then I saw the car, and the strange soldier with the pistol, and Hailstone who was frightened, and Greencoat who was angry. When they went away, I noticed that there was still someone in the car. I looked and looked, and then I saw your heads over the edge, and I heard you talking about some misfortune. One of you said, "But how shall we find Dogalon?" "Oh, joy," I thought, "here are friends, and I must greet them." So I ran quickly across the courtyard and took off my boots so that I could climb up on the car. And now I am with you, and that's all. "Tell us," said Big Tiger, "why you broke up the yurt which had stood at White Stone for such a long time, and what your father intends to do." "When I left you, I ran home, and my father said, 'You're late.' I reported all I knew. My father said, 'Hamaga, don't worry,' and then he awoke my mother. When she had heard everything, she said, 'You will break up the yurt at once and pack it.' My father was horrified, and I was still more horrified, but we did not let mother see it." "Bolna," said Dogalon. "Agreed." "Bator will saddle the camels," mother continued, "and I will go to the Shensi people behind the hill and barter a sheep for flour. It will be a bad exchange, but we can't take the sheep with us as we're going to the Etsin Gaul. When everything is ready packed," mother continued, "we will delay loading up until the living Buddha and his suite set out. We will then ask permission to go part of the way with them. Our tracks will then be covered up by theirs, and Greencoat will not find out where we are. Neither will he dare interfere with us while we are traveling in the company of the holy man. For a long time past, I have ceased to be happy at White Stone, and so we will go to a place where the land is free and where there is no Amban to give unjust verdicts. My father, Nai Dong, will welcome us at the Etsin Gaul. He has the ear of the Torgut Wang, and we shall have better pastures for the camels than we have here." A note tells us that the Torgut Wang is the king of the Torgut Mongols. My father was overwhelmed on hearing these words. He knelt down before my mother and said, "It has all happened for the best, and it is heaven's decree." We then packed and tied up our belongings. We worked until the hour of the tiger. When we were finished, I said, "I must go now and say two words to my friends who are waiting for me." "Go," said my mother, "and when the holy man is stepping into his carriage, kneel down before him, beg his blessing, and ask his gracious permission for us to travel part of the way with him. I will do what you tell me, I replied, and went away. Then I climbed over the wall, and now I am here with you.